This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Well, a happy Friday to you. This is Ottawa Now with Dahlia Kurtz today. It is 3:08. It is 18 degrees to life. That's a good number. It's 18 degrees. And before we get to our next guest, a couple of updates for you. Whole Foods has, surprise, surprise, reversed its decision after the swift outrage from the government and from you when it comes to them denying their employees the ability to wear a poppy. Would that change your thoughts on Whole Foods? Do you now think, oh, so magnanimous, so kind, so gracious? What are your thoughts? You could weigh in on 580 CFRA's Facebook page, or you could tweet me at Dahlia Kurtz. Also, we're going to give you updates when it comes to the American election. Right now, we're looking at electoral votes that are putting Biden at 264. Trump is at 214. Biden is expected to speak tonight at 8 o'clock. What's he going to be saying? And is there enough Kleenex in the world for Donald Trump's tears? But I want to get to this. My next guest has personally spoken with Premier Doug Ford to tell him, to plead with him, to beg him about what long-term care homes need to prevent more unnecessary deaths, deaths that are on the rise. And Doug Ford himself has said he's losing sleep over this. And he's committed to helping long-term care homes. So about 9 months into this mess, what's happened? Essentially, he's abandoned them. Earlier this week, Doug Ford says, okay, here's what we're going to do. We will give long-term care homes that 4 hours of care that each resident needs a day. Fantastic. By 2024, 2025. So that in and of itself is already disgraceful. But then the budget comes out. The $187 billion budget, and how much of it has been allocated for long-term care homes? Why don't I allow my next guest to share that information with you? She is the one who has been speaking with Premier Doug Ford. She is the one who has been begging for help when it comes to these unnecessary deaths that are on the rise at our long-term care homes. She is the CEO of the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario, Doris Greenspoon. Doris, what is the government giving you as part of its budget to help with long-term care homes?
Nothing for direct care, Dahlia. I am at a loss of words, quite frankly, at this point, because we were promised and because we once again believed. And worse even, the premier is going around saying to people we will be the best jurisdiction in Canada because we are saying we will have 4 hours of care. But it is, at this point in our view, simply an election promise. There is not a penny in that budget that is for the RNs, RPNs, PSWs or nurse practitioners that are desperately needed because people are dying, Dahlia. This is not maybe they will die. They are dying as we speak. So we are desperate, and we are doing two things about that, and I will ask the public to join us en masse. Number one, on Monday, we have a cross-country meeting. Go to www.rnao.ca. And Dahlia, I will send you the information for you to post, but also for you to come and cover, because you have been on our side on this fight and the fight of families all along. It is a panel that will be moderated by Andre Picard, who is well known in this area, and by people from all walks of life in organizations. So CanH will be involved. The PSW Association will be involved. We will be involved. Linda Silas from CFNU, Canadian Federation Nurses Union, will be involved. We are going to create such a massive groundswell of pressure for both, for the premier in Ontario. First of all, stop saying you will deliver 4 hours if you are not serious about putting the money. and also go and meet with Justin Trudeau, the prime minister that also says he wants to do national standards, get the money, and let's get moving. Because seniors are dying, and they cannot continue to wait until governments, federal and provincial, decide to actually do something about the rhetoric.
Today's promises seem to be tomorrow's lies. The CEO of the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario, Doris Greenspoon, is with us right now. I'm Dahlia. This is Ottawa Now. Doris, you have spoken with the Premier before. You have joined me on the Goods countless times to talk about all of these unnecessary deaths and the promises the Premier has made, the conversations that you've had with the government. When was the last time that the government spoke directly with you?
The Premier called me a couple of days before Thanksgiving to ask me, Doris, and that was, I'm quoting him, do we have nurses available? I said, yes, Premier, we do, and don't believe anyone that tells you otherwise. If they don't find them, tell them to come to us, and our NEO will give them the nurses. But Dahlia, once again, Minister Fullerton didn't go to fight to get the money that is necessary to actually hire people. You cannot hire people if you don't have the means.
So we have people dying. We've had public pressure for so long, and you continue to have the stamina to pressure the Premier. What do you think it will take? Because now you've put pressure on from so many aspects. The community has been supporting you. People are dying. It's not only is it embarrassing for Ontario to be amongst the worst in the world for long-term care, it is downright disgraceful and heinous. So what's it going to take, Doris, in this last moment of our conversation?
It will take a groundswell of the public. Please go to our website, www.rnao.ca, sign the action alert, join us on Monday. It's of course free of charge. Bring your families, bring your, you know, people that care about seniors to get the care that they need and they deserve, because if not, we are going to continue to lose more and more residents in nursing homes. And also, because they should be helped also in the first place to stay at home with decent home care, which also didn't get money.
$0 of $187 billion. Zero of $187 billion has gone.
No, Dahlia, where the money is going? To the developers that will develop new nursing homes to be ready 3 years from now. But they will not have the staffing either, because we don't have the staffing for the current ones. How are we going to?
Doris, we're going to continue to follow this. Zero of $187 billion has gone towards helping long-term care. Heinously disgraceful and embarrassing. It is 3:16 just ahead. What do the Liberals have to say about this budget? And what are they going to say when I tell them what the Conservative said about his thoughts on it? That is coming up after traffic and weather with Maddie Eisenberg. I'm Dahlia, and this is Ottawa Now.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Well, a happy Friday to you. I'm Dahlia. It's 3:22. It's 18 degrees. It really is November. How exciting is that? I had to give you that because we're going to talk about the budget in a second. So I have to make you happy in some way, right? Still ahead, though, before we get to our budget chat, a U.S. election update. What is going on ahead of Joe Biden, who's expected to speak tonight, 8 o'clock? What is happening with the election? What is happening when it comes to Donald Trump and his claims discrediting democracy and the electoral process and what's been going on? We're going to have a lawyer joining us on that in a bit on Ottawa Now. But Doug Ford's latest budget. We were just talking about long-term care homes. They're getting zero of the $187 billion from that budget. People with disabilities are getting zero from that $187 billion of that budget. What's happening with class sizes? What are they getting? What's happening with businesses? What are they getting? Oh, there's a difference between small and big business. Now, I know that Ontario Liberal leader Stephen Del Duca has his thoughts on this. But before we get to what he has to say, I want to tell you about a tweet he put up yesterday. And then this morning, I heard on our sister station in Toronto, I heard on News Talk 1010, I heard Rod Phillips' response to it. So the tweet in question came from Stephen Del Duca yesterday. And it says, Doug Ford's budget is proof that he's distracted, rewarding his... Oh, I'm not reading the correct tweet actually right now because I've got so many tweets that just scrolled through. Let me play this clip and then I'm going to read you the exact tweet that it came from.
I think that kind of feels like one of those tweets. Maybe he wrote it himself, but before he'd read the budget. I mean, this is the largest spending budget in Ontario history, you know, as we said, because of the pandemic. So, you know, there's record amounts of spending, $8 billion more for healthcare, more money for education, very specific programs, you know, doubling the money for the Black Youth Action Task Force.
So we were talking about a tweet from Stephen Del Duca that Rod Phillips was responding to, and Del Duca said that Doug Ford's budget is a betrayal of students, frontline education workers, seniors, and those who are being disproportionately impacted by the pandemic. You and your family deserve better. So now that Stephen Del Duca, Ontario Liberal leader, has heard Rod Phillips' response to that, good afternoon, Stephen Del Duca. What's your response to him?
Well, good afternoon. Thank you so much for having me on. I stand by the tweet. I stand by all the comments that I made yesterday and I've made throughout the day today talking to media all over Ontario. And frankly, I think you hit the nail on the head in the introduction. We know that seniors living, vulnerable seniors who've gone through heartbreaking circumstances in long-term care homes across Ontario should not have to wait another 4 or 5 years to get the kind of care that they need. That's what Doug Ford is proposing. We know that schools, I mean, I'm a parent, I'm a father, two young daughters in grade 8 and grade 4. There needs to be funding in place and an ironclad commitment to shrink class sizes and make sure that our kids, their families, and frontline educators are kept safe. And we also know, all the stats show this, particularly because sectors like the service sector, tourism, hospitality, so much more, the workers in those sectors, disproportionately female, people of color, Black people, Indigenous people, have been absolutely battered economically by this pandemic, and Doug Ford's budget has virtually nothing for them. So I think it is a betrayal of people who, in this moment, in this crisis, really needed a leader in Doug Ford to step up and support them, and he failed.
Stephen Del Duca, are you driving while you're talking to me? Do I hear a signal?
Yeah, I am driving. I'm on my way to pick up my daughters from school right now, actually.
look at you multitasking. You know, Doug Ford's popularity is still, it's doing really well. His popularity is doing well while we have people dying in long-term care at alarmingly high rates that are a disgrace in the world, not just in Ontario. We have a community of people in our province. The disabled community makes up 22% of Canada, and we have them living on $0 to $1,169 a month. We now have fraud investigators who are going to be hired by our province to find out where people on ODSP are committing fraud because, you know, everybody wants to live the glamorous life between $0 and $1,100 and whatever dollars a month. How is it that as our government is telling us to protect the most vulnerable people by wearing a mask, washing our hands, staying 2 meters apart, how is it that they fail to take care of our most vulnerable people, yet their popularity is doing really well?
Well, first of all, I mean, I don't pay too much close attention to polling, but I do know that Doug Ford's numbers, for what it's worth, have started to slip a little bit. And I think that people are realizing that the jig is up. That it's one thing to exceed expectations earlier in a crisis because his tone has improved versus where it was in the first 2 years he was in power. But I think people realize you now have to back up an empathetic tone with actual competence and real priorities. And so, you know, Rod Phillips mentioned in that interview you played about how much more they're spending. It's not about the dollar figure. It's about your priorities and what you value. And the other tweet of mine that you almost started, you started to read and then stopped, was that Doug Ford, and we've seen this over the last few weeks, Doug Ford is far more interested in rewarding his friends, the people who made him leader of that party and premier of Ontario, people like Charles McVitie. And, you know, he should be standing up for disabled Ontarians. He should be standing up for our vulnerable seniors and students in publicly funded education. And he's not, and I don't think he will.
Do you think Doug Ford is ableist?
Well, look, I don't know if that's the right label. I think he's someone who's got misguided priorities. I think his priorities and values are out of step with what Ontario needs, both during this pandemic and even more importantly on the other side of the pandemic. And that's the work that Ontario Liberals are focused on.
Stephen Del Duca, Ontario Liberal leader, thank you so much for multitasking. Drive safely, please. Pull over next time.
Thank you. I'm Dahlia. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I'm Dahlia. This is Ottawa Now. Still ahead, what is happening with the U.S. election? We are going to have a Washington Post correspondent join us. That's coming up. It is 3:29. I'm Dahlia. This is Ottawa Now on 580 CFRA.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Why, hello there. And a happy Friday afternoon to you. It's 3:37. It's 18 degrees. It is November. I can't get over it. It is so exciting. I'm Dahlia. And Christy Cameron will be back with you soon enough, but you've got me the next 3 days. And by the by, on the goods this weekend, we have a Remembrance Day tribute not to be forgotten, which makes sense, obviously, right? Now, tonight at 8 o'clock, we are expected to hear Joe Biden speak. What is happening right now when it comes to the American election? Live election results at ctvnews.ca. Talk about electoral votes, right? You need 270 to win. Biden is at 264 right now. Trump is at 214. So I told you earlier about what's going on. So we don't have a clear presidential winner yet as ballots continue to be counted. And there was a dance party outside of the Pennsylvania Convention Center after the latest Philadelphia numbers dropped, putting Biden ahead. And there are going to be recounts in Georgia, for instance. There will be a recount, but I wanted to tell you about this, and I didn't have the opportunity before we get to our next guest. Greta Thunberg, she trolled Trump with a callback to his anger management tweet. She poked fun at President Trump's calls to stop vote counts using his own words from a 2019 tweet, tweeting, "So ridiculous, Donald must work on his anger management problem, then go to a good old-fashioned movie with a friend. Chill, Donald, chill." That's from the 17-year-old Swedish activist in a response to the president saying, stop the count. And that was, of course, in reference to the tweet that he sent in December of 2019 with the same phrasing, criticizing Time's decision to name Thunberg the person of the year. So while we could talk about the election from our Canadian perspective, what is happening in the United States right now? For instance, we have that dance party in Philadelphia as Biden pulls ahead of Trump. Well, joining us, we have the national political reporter for The Washington Post, Amy Gardner. Good afternoon, Amy.
Hey there.
So this is something that you are reporting. You are never going to forget this as part of your career, are you?
I think that's a very fair statement. It's been quite a ride.
What have been some of the standouts that you've experienced that you think, I can't believe that we're going through this in journalism right now?
I mean, I think the most difficult part of this is having to write objectively about the statements that President Trump makes that are demonstrably untrue, and where we can show that they're untrue, and it draws you into a partisan argument on social media. And, you know, in the media generally, that's very challenging because, you know, Trump's speech, was it just last night? I don't even know what day it is anymore. you know, just listing instance after instance of alleged fraud, stealing, rigging, dumping. Like, literally, there's no evidence that a single one of those things that he mentioned has happened. I've been covering voting for the better part of 2 years for the Post. I've been at the Post for 15 years covering campaigns. And I've never immersed myself in the workings of election officials and what they do to prepare for an election as I have this year. I've gotten to know dozens of election officials across the country. I've watched them work. I see what they're doing. I've read up the rules. And the things that he says about these ballots being stolen or being dumped are simply not true. He's even not telling the truth when he says that they're not letting Republican observers into the polling location. I mean, like, we've literally interviewed Republican poll watchers in the polling locations that the Trump campaign is saying isn't allowing Republican poll watchers into. And when they say that no one's allowed to watch it, there's like literally a live stream on the internet where you can watch the counting happen. So that's probably the biggest challenge, is facing this sort of torrent of untrue statements. But I want to say something that sort of pivots to the positive in all of this, which is the workings of the election officials across the country. Some are Republicans, some are Democrats. A lot of them are not partisans at all. They work for county governments. And they're working tirelessly around the clock right now to count these ballots, to count them accurately, to make sure that they're legal and eligible. And they're doing so under tremendous pressure. Not only does the country want to know who our next president is going to be, but they're being attacked. So I just take my hat off to those folks.
It's a job that I don't think people have thought so closely about as they are right now. You bring up another interesting point, though, Amy, when you're talking about how hard it is for you to work to find facts right now. And Donald Trump, not only is he the first president in history, but he's the first public figure in history, along with, and it sounds funny, but it's true, Kim Kardashian, to be able to control the narrative of the media to a certain extent, because they become the media and then they become the news source, and then the media takes that information from them because they're choosing to speak to Twitter before they speak to media about something. Have you noted, since you've been covering Donald Trump from the beginning, because you speak of this torrent of untruths, as you say, have you noticed this torrent of untruths get stronger as we push through the election, or is this pretty much been the standard over the course of his term for you?
I mean, we have a fact checker team that has been logging his untrue statements since the beginning of his first presidential campaign, and it's been pretty much that's been the pace, the par for the duration of his time in politics in our country. It's not a new phenomenon. Has it gotten a little worse? I don't think any of us has ever seen anything like the speech that he gave from the White House briefing room. So, I think it's probably gotten a little bit worse. There's one thing that you just said, though, that I would love to comment on, which is, this idea that he speaks directly to people and they take in what he has to say unfiltered and believe it. I think that's true. And I think it's really important to think about the fact that there are a lot of people in our country, nearly half the country, that believes what he tells them. I mean, there are people gathering in crowds outside of these counting facilities in Phoenix, in Detroit, in Philadelphia, and they're saying count the vote, or they're saying stop the count. You know, it depends on whether he's ahead or behind, what their chant is in each city. There are people in those crowds who genuinely believe something illegal is happening inside those halls, and I give some of them the benefit of the doubt for not thinking that the President of the United States would lie to him. I think amongst them are also some cynical bad actors who are trying to stir up trouble. There were some members of the Proud Boys, the white
P Boys, I call them on air, the P Boys. It's more
fitting. Yeah, in Philly yesterday, I believe. And I don't think that those are individuals who are operating in good faith. But I think it's really important to not assume bad faith in all these folks who actually believe something nefarious is going on, because that's what they've been told. And it's really unfortunate that we do have like a right-wing media and a left-wing media and not enough middle-of-the-road media outlets. I'd like to believe that my news outlet is in the middle, but of course the folks on the right don't think so, because they don't want our, you know, description of what's true and not true to contradict what they're trying to tell their people. And it's really, really unfortunate.
If you're just joining, I'm Dahlia. This is Ottawa Now. And in the same Twitter thread, I have been called ultra-white right-wing and ultra-left-wing. So I understand what Amy Kennedy from The Washington Post is saying now. So, you know, sorry, Amy Gardner. So what I'm looking at here, though, something that you just said when you were talking about the people who believe Trump, it's really interesting to look at exit polling stations. The exit polling is showing that President Trump did incredibly well among black male voters and performed decently with black female voters, far better than in 2016 with both groups. Doesn't that seem odd to you?
I mean, you know, people are complicated. And, you know, the other group that President Trump did really, really well with this year is Latinos. I think that there are some complicated forces at work in 2016 and in 2020. Our economy was a lot stronger 4 years ago than it is right now. People are out of work. People are afraid. People are weighing whether the right balance of public policy is to bring back jobs and lighten up on the protections against COVID or to contain COVID at the expense of bringing back jobs. That's a really difficult decision for a lot of Americans. I'm sure it is for a lot of Canadians too. And so I think that that has caused some cross-pollination of some of the different demographic groups and how we expect or anticipate those groups to vote.
Last question, Amy. What is your sense ahead of Biden taking the stage tonight to speak to the public?
You know, I think it's scheduled for 8 o'clock, and we've got a few hours to go. I still think it's conceivable that Nevada would be called today. That's almost a 2-point lead. I know that the news outlets that make these calls are proceeding with an abundance of caution, and so it's also possible that it's not called yet. I anticipate that they are preparing for a victory speech, but they're going to, be cautious depending on what's been called by the time we get to 8 o'clock. All it takes is Nevada, the 6 electoral votes in Nevada, for this to get across the finish line. So that's still possible. I think it's less likely that we see Pennsylvania called today, given how many votes are still out, and we know that Georgia won't be called because there's going to be a recount. And Arizona is also a little bit up in the air. I mean, Biden's lead is still shrinking. It's still solid. I think it's in the 20,000 range right now. But that's a point and a half. So everybody's proceeding cautiously. It just depends on whether Nevada gets called before 8 o'clock.
Well, thank you so much during all of this pandemonium to take the time to join us and to be so gracious about allowing me to give you the wrong last name. I just got a tweet from somebody named Amy Kennedy, and it just popped up in my face right when I was about to say
no
Amy Gardner. Amy Gardner from The Washington Post. This is a historic point in her career. It's going to be a historic point within the next couple of days. That's for sure when it comes to the election. We'll continue to keep you posted on that still ahead. A gym that is going its own way when it comes to masks. I'm Dahlia. This is Ottawa Now.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Well, a happy afternoon to you on this gorgeous Friday. It is 18 degrees. It is 3:53. I am Dahlia. Just ahead, you're going to find out about a gym that's moving in its own direction, I guess you could say, when it comes to masks and how it's moving forward. That's going to come up after our news at 4 o'clock. There is a question I have on 580 CFRA's Facebook page for you. And isn't it how interesting things happen once there's public outcry? So Whole Foods had said, and they'd even doubled down on it this morning, that their employees were not allowed to wear poppies because it's part of their dress code. No, you know, honoring Canada's identity and those who gave us our freedom and democracy. And then Doug Ford got very upset this morning. He was on 580 CFRA and he's very upset about it, said that his family will boycott Whole Foods. And then he went further later this morning with plans to prohibit companies with legislation from banning staff from wearing poppies. So I asked if you support Ford's plan, if you would think that, yes, we should not allow companies to ban their employees. We shouldn't allow employers to ban employees from wearing poppies. By Whole Foods did reverse its decision after all of this outcry. But I'm surprised at how many people are actually saying they wouldn't support. This is the first time I'm like really openly, vehemently with Doug Ford. I am supporting this decision. And I'm surprised at how many people are not supporting that decision, saying, well, if you're going to poppies, where do we end? Where's the fine line? Where do we say, well, the government can't get in on something like this? The government can't tell employers what their employees are allowed to wear and what their employees can't wear. And the other side of this that we haven't talked about on Twitter, where there's a lot of conversation right now, is would you boycott Whole Foods over something like this? As Doug Ford says, I'd be interested to find out if after Whole Foods reversed its decision, if Doug Ford would still choose to boycott, if his family would still choose to boycott Whole Foods. You know, after somebody comes out, and in this situation, I would see it differently, because if somebody looks at a decision that they made and then they go, oh, yeah, you know what? This was not very smart. I've learned from this. It's a mistake. I'm going to accept responsibility. I'm going to move forward. I would honor that, and I would think, good for you. Good for you for accepting responsibility, learning from your mistake, and moving forward. But in this case, we have Whole Foods doubling down this morning on its response, saying, no, we are not going to reverse our decision. This is the way it is. And then all of a sudden, we have a bigger stink being made. And we have Doug Ford saying, you know what? We're going to create legislation faster than I've ever seen any other legislation created, by the by. We're going to create legislation that is going to quash that. And employers will have to let employees wear whatever. You know what? I don't find that to be very virtuous on the part of Whole Foods. I find it to be a response to an inflammatory situation, and they're trying to put out a fire. I think that I would still, if I would go there, except I would call it Whole Paycheck instead of Whole Foods because it's far too expensive, so I don't shop there. But I would still boycott, because I do not think, when you don't even have the integrity to stand by what you say and you're only waffling because you're feeling this pressure, you're not learning a lesson from it, why would I want to give you business? What do you think? Oh, but they have some really, really good food there, right? Would you give up your favorite brownie? Would you give up your favorite pre-made food that costs half of your paycheck out of your principles, out of your values? I mean, quite honestly, if I chose to not buy from businesses and every single business and every single store and every single manufacturer and every single company and country that makes something that I might be against, I would probably be naked and lying in the middle of Rideau without any shelter whatsoever if I actually boycotted every place that I was offended by. But you pick your battles. Is this a battle you would pick? Would you boycott Whole Foods? Why don't you tweet me at Dahlia Kurtz? Join the conversation on 580 CFRA's Facebook page. Still ahead, I discovered this and I feel really, really bad for this OC Transpo driver, and maybe we could help him get back his backpack. That's going to come up. And what is happening with a gym that is moving its own way, so to speak? You're going to learn about that after the news at 4 o'clock. It is 3:58. I'm Dahlia. This is Ottawa Now on 580 CFRA.